the road right up here, what road's that? Did you take a right? Huntsville Browns Ferry? Is that Huntsville? No. This is Huntsville Browns Ferry. Stewart Road. About a year ago, if you were to drive down that road, you would have seen devastation. And many of you did and saw that everywhere you looked, all around you. You saw devastation from the terrible tornadoes that came through the 27th. Today, you can drive down that road and see something a little bit different. Not everybody has put their house back together and put all the pieces back together, but a lot of people have. And we know that we were touched here, several in this congregation. Thankfully, not in a physical way, but in a material way. Their homes were damaged, several different ones, and we're happy that several different ones here have put their homes back together, have been able to move, and the Mills are one of those families. And I want to invite everyone on their behalf. They're having an open house today. And so you drive down, I can remember going down there and looking over there in such a gorgeous home, and that was just completely demolished. It was a shell of a house. And now it's a gorgeous house again, and we want to go there and celebrate with them. I know it's been a long year, but they've been good and patient, I do believe, and they have a nice home from that. We were at the last Leaders Convention last Sunday, and we were there sitting in one of the award ceremonies. They're handing awards out to the young men and women that have placed, I guess. And there were some kids that with a church that every time something happened, they would get up, one of theirs received an award, they'd get up with a stick with a head cut out and run around and scream. And I don't know what in the world that was about, but it was very unusual, first time I'd ever seen that. And Amy Bates said something to the effect that, what about next year we run around with your head on a stick? And I just didn't hardly know how to take that. I hope she means a cut out of it. I don't even want that to be done, but anyway. There was a gym owner who was offering a $1,000 prize to anyone that could prove that they were stronger than him. Mind you, this guy was huge. He was a hulk of a man, if you will. He was, of course, a bodybuilder. He had won several different competitions, and he was one of 10 of the strongest men in the United States, and he'd won some of these strongest men. You know, you've seen those competitions where they pull stuff, but he had won several different events, and so he was a big guy. And the contest was that he would take a glass and take a lemon, and he would squeeze that lemon until he could get every last drop out of that lemon into the glass. And then he would hand the contestant the remains of that lemon. And if that guy was able to just squeeze one single drop out of that lemon, then they would get $1,000. And so when it first started out, you know, you had a lot of different guys, and you can just imagine the kind of guys that were coming in, you know, the blue collar, a lot of wrestlers and boxers and weightlifters and all these bulked up huge men coming in, and no one was able to do it. So many people tried out and registered to do it, and no one was able to squeeze one single drop out after that guy got done with it. Well, one day there was a short, skinny little guy that came into the gym, and much to everybody's surprise, he signed up, you know, he registered for that. And when it was about to take place, you know, after all the laughter and the poking fun and the snickering died down because he's so small, the guy, the owner of the gym, took the lemon and he commenced to squeeze it on, and he squeezed all that he possibly could out of it. Couldn't get anything else out of it. And then he handed the wilted remains to the short, skinny guy. Have at it. And so he started squeezing and squeezing, and much to everybody's surprise, he got 10, not just one, but 10 additional drops out of that lemon. And everybody was, you know, was just stunned at first, wasn't saying anything. Then everybody began to applaud and cheer and everything. And as the owner of the gym was counting the money out to him, his reward money, he said, "Man, curiosity is just absolutely killing me. What do you do? You know, you a lumberjack, you're a construction worker. Tell me, what do you do?" And the guy says, "No, I'm not any of that. I work for the IRS." Squeeze every last drop out. You can take that for whatever it's worth. April the 15th, what is that? Tax day. Today, if you have not already written your check, if you owed anything to the United States Treasury and put that thing in the mailbox, and guess what? You're late. That is the date that we dread, and a lot of us will wait till, even if you write the check out early, a lot of us wait till the very last day to put it in the mailbox. Well, today we're going to talk about biblical Bible IRS agents, better known as tax collectors, and there was a lot of them in the Bible. You know, we don't fear tax collectors, do we? Some of us might. Have you ever been audited? I don't know. I've never been audited, but we don't really fear them. We don't like them sometimes, and we don't like handing that check over, and we cringe doing that, and we want to hold on to it. But, you know, if you do what you're supposed to do and you pay what you're supposed to pay, then we don't really have that big of a problem. But in Jesus' time, it was a different story because these guys were ruthless in a sense. They were very much disliked. Well, that would be an understatement. They were hated by many. You know, they were despised by many, and they weren't like that at all. They weren't like any that we know today. In fact, they were hated so much, there's 8 different times in Scripture that people are complaining about Jesus eating with tax collectors and sinners, as if there are 2 different categories of sinners. You got your typical little sinner over here, and then you got your tax collector. You know, you got your big sinner over here. And so why were they so despised? And we can imagine some reasons why and why we don't like it today, but let's look at some reasons why, first of all, they were so despised in that day. And then we're going to look at one specific tax collector. One thing is that they worked for Israel's enemy, the Roman Empire, the Roman government. Now, Rome had come in and they had taken control of Israel. Here's a foreign power and they've come in and not only taken control, but they are demanding to be paid taxes by those people. Now, to put that in today's perspective, it would be like, and I'm just using for example, Russia. Be like Russia or any foreign country coming in and taking over the United States, and you think that you hate paying taxes now to our government. Imagine what it felt like paying it to somebody else's government. And so it was something that was very much despised. It was kind of like pouring salt in a wound, if you will. You know, it's bad enough to pay taxes, but to pay taxes to a foreign country, but to pay taxes to someone that is your own, is a Jew that is working for this foreign power. And so they were very much despised for that reason. Another reason why is because they would have to swear allegiance and a pagan oath to Caesar. And so, in essence, they basically had to reject and turn their back completely on God, Jehovah God, if they were to be a tax collector. Because they had to swear this oath, and in that oath, they were basically saying that Caesar is God. And so they basically had to completely turn their back on God if they were to be a tax collector. And so you can just imagine they were hated for this by their fellow Jew. Another reason why is because if they were a tax collector, they were not able to go and worship in the temple. In most cases, the tax collectors were not able to go in the temple and worship with everybody else. And yet, so you can imagine, you know, that they not only have turned their back on God, they've turned their back on God's people. And they're not even able to go in there and worship with God's people. And so that was another reason why they were despised and looked down upon. But there's another reason. You know, Rome had all the power in the world, and they could come in, and with all of that power, they could say, okay, Joe, you're going to collect taxes for us, and Charles, you're going to do that too, and whether you like it or not, if you value your life, you're going to do that. Well, the odd thing about this is, it was a choice. They didn't make anybody. It was a choice, and so here is a Jew that makes the decision to turn his back on God and his people in a sense, and to work for this government that has taken over Israel, God's people. And so it was a choice. And they were hated and despised for that. But this is one that I wasn't aware of until I started preparing for this sermon. The Roman government did not pay their tax collectors a dime. They didn't pay them a dime. What they did was they employed them. They gave them the position and they gave them the power to get that money. And they would send them out and say, okay, you get X amount of dollars and that is what the taxes that are coming to us, to Rome, to the government. And anything you get on top of that, that's your salary. And the simple fact that most everybody, it was known that most any tax collector was filthy, stinking rich. They had an abundance of money. What does that tell you? They stole from their countrymen. They stole great amounts from their countrymen. And so they worked for a foreign power. It was their choice. They turned their back on God. They turned their back on God's people. They made this choice to do so. And then on top of that, they're stealing from God's people in an enormous amount. And so they were hated. They were despised. Now let's turn our attention to one in particular, one that we know very well. Turn your Bibles to Luke 19, if you would. Zacchaeus, we've heard the story, the account, I don't like saying story, the account of Zacchaeus because he was a real man. He is not a parable or anything. And we've, remember in VBS, singing the Zacchaeus song, Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and so we all know about Zacchaeus. This morning, being especially the 15th, I want us to think about Zacchaeus, and I want to see what lessons we can learn from this tax collector. Luke 19, starting with verse 1. It says, he, talking about Jesus here, he entered Jericho and was passing through. And there was a man called by the name of Zacchaeus, who was a chief tax collector, and he was rich. And Zacchaeus was trying to see who Jesus was and was unable to because of the crowd, for he was small in stature. And so he ran on ahead and climbed up in a sycamore tree in order to see him, for he was about to pass through his way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for today I must stay at your house. And he hurried and came down and received him gladly. And when they saw this, they all began to grumble, saying, he's gone to eat with be a guest of a man who's a sinner. And Zacchaeus stopped and said to the Lord, behold, Lord, half of my possessions I will give to the poor, and if I've defrauded anyone of anything, I will give back four times as much. And Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because he too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man has come to seek and to save those who are lost. All right, two things I want to note just offhand in this passage about Zacchaeus. First of all, it says that Zacchaeus was a very rich man. And so you can kind of get a picture of what kind of man this is. He is a man that would be living in a nice neighborhood, who would be have that house, that big house. He's the man that would be sporting the latest style, the latest sandals, and the latest fashion. He'd be the one being seen in the nicest chariot or whatever, with the nicest horses and everything. He's that person, the one that has pretty much everything. He's a wealthy man. He's a rich man, it says. But something else here. Not only did he have a very despised job, but he was very good at his job. What does that tell you? He was very good at his job because it says here that he was a chief tax collector, and so he has advanced up to this position, very good at what he does. Now, I have often wondered why in the world, knowing the background and knowing how much they were hated and despised, why would anybody want this position? Why would any Jew in his right mind want this job? Well, think about it. There's a lot of different reasons, and we could speculate all day long, but, you know, he might have wanted it just out of greed. He might have seen that, well, I would love to be a rich man, just like anybody would love to be, and so this is a way that I can obtain wealth. He might have done that. It might have been that Zacchaeus did not have a job. He was out of work, and the only job that was available at the time was to be a tax collector, and so he had the job. Who knows? It might have been that because he was a little bit different, it might have been because he was short and maybe a little different, that he might have been picked on throughout the years. Who knows? He might have been made fun of throughout the years. And so he might have been seeing this as a way to get back, you know, because after all, there's a lot of power here. But one thing we do know for certain, that as being a tax collector, he had the power of Rome behind him. And that's saying a lot, being the most powerful government at that time. So he had the power of Rome behind him, and he might not have been feared because of his physical self, but he was feared because he was a chief tax collector. So he was feared by all because of the power that he had. And so we could speculate of why he would have been a tax collector, but one thing that is very clear that we don't have to speculate about at all is that Zacchaeus is very, very evident. He was looking for something. The man that had everything was looking for something that he did not have. What was he looking for? I don't have a doubt in me, because of his position, that this man was hated, that he was despised, that people didn't want to be around him. In fact, I bet he hated himself because of some of the decisions that he had made. And I bet he wasn't happy at all. He was ostracized because from the temple, from worship, because of his position. And you think about it, he might have thought back at the day before he became a tax collector and going and being able to worship with family and friends and other fellow Jews, and now he can't do that anymore. And so he might be thinking back. But I bet he's alone, and I bet he's miserable. And the reason why is because sin will make you miserable. Sin will make anybody miserable. Here's a man that pretty much had everything, but yet he has nothing. And he's looking for something else. And so he hears that this rabbi, this great teacher from Galilee, Jesus of Nazareth, is coming through the area, and he's heard about his reputation. Don't you know everybody knows about Jesus? You know, his the word of Jesus and his miracles, his teachings, who he claims that he's the Son of God. Everybody knows about Jesus. And he's heard about his reputation. But guess what else he's heard about? I bet he's heard that he eats with tax collectors. Not many people did that. I bet he's heard that he also has a tax collector that is one of his close. One of the 12 apostles is a tax collector. And so he's dying to see Jesus and see what this man is all about. But the crowd, as we see here in the story and the account, is very great, and he's a very short man, and so he's not able. And don't you know, they don't care nothing about Zacchaeus seeing Jesus. Why in the world does this man want to see Jesus? There's probably the religious elite in that crowd, and here's this sinner, this tax collector, this social reject. So he climbs up in a tree. Now try to get that picture in your head. I can't imagine climbing a tree right now. I'm too fat to climb. You know, this is a grown man that has climbed a tree. That is the desire that this man had for Jesus Christ. He had a great desire to see the Lord and to know more about Him. You think about that. What if we had that desire today? What if our desire was so overwhelming that we would do whatever it took, no matter what everybody else was doing against us to try to stop us, but to be able to know Jesus a little bit better? And so that's what he's done. And he's climbed up in this tree. And here Jesus comes walking through the crowd, and there's probably hundreds, maybe thousands, I have no idea, but there's a great crowd. And Jesus is surrounded by probably, like I said, some of the religious elite of the day. There's probably some that think they're better than anybody else. And here's Zacchaeus up in the tree. And what does he say? He overlooks everybody else. And he looks at Zacchaeus and says, I'm going to go dine with you today. I'm going to go to your house today. And you think about that. Think about how Zacchaeus would have felt then. Think about the talk about this. I'm sure that there's a lot of people that were murmuring at this time. And so he goes to Zacchaeus' house. You know, it might have been a very long time since Zacchaeus had had a fellow Jew at his house, being in his position, being that he was despised, and it struck him. And we can see there in the text by how it changed him that it struck him, because even though he was a very rich person, he was poor when it came to his soul. Very poor. And that's really what matters more than anything else. And look at what he's saying here. I'm going to give whatever, anything that I've taken, I'm going to give it back. And notice what he says here. I'm going to give them back four times the amount. Now, according to the Jewish law, someone that had stolen something was required to give back that thing that they had stolen plus 20%. And so what do we see? We see that he has gone way above and beyond. I'm going to give four times the amount. That's his desire to make things right, even though he has been so wrong in the past. That's what we know about Zacchaeus. Have you ever read a scripture and just wondered, I wonder what happens after that? You ever read about a Bible character and just wondered, I wonder what happened to them next? I wonder what happened, kind of like Paul Harvey used to say, the rest of the story. I wonder what the rest of the story is. Well, that's all we're told about Zacchaeus in the scriptures, but we have a lot of early church history that talks about Zacchaeus. and that's very reliable. It's very accurate. In fact, we talk about the apostles and how the different apostles died and were persecuted, and all of that comes from church history. And that same church history that talks about how they were martyred talks about Zacchaeus as well. And when you look at some of those writings, you see that Zacchaeus found what he was looking for. He was looking for something else. He found what he was looking for. He found Jesus Christ. He found a Savior. He found forgiveness. But we'll go a step further than that. He found something else that he probably wasn't expecting at all. He found a church family. He found a family that would accept him, not reject him like he's been done for so long because of what he's been, but that will accept him for who he is. He found a family out of all this. Clement of Rome is a historian, well-known, well-respected, and he tells that Zacchaeus surrendered his position as a tax collector. He became a beloved elder in the church at Jericho, and he was an effective evangelist, and he preached all around the region of the Red Sea. Doesn't that make you smile? When you think about that, I wish I knew the rest of the story about Zacchaeus. Well, this accurate historian says, well, here's the rest of the story. He went from being one of the chief sinners and rejected by all to being an elder in the church and an evangelist. That's something. One tradition says that Zacchaeus later went with Peter to Rome and that he was there when Peter and Paul was executed and that he himself was also executed by Nero. Now, I read that and I thought, what? Think about the irony there. You know, here Zacchaeus in his early life, he desires Rome. He desires what Rome has, the power they have, the wealth that they have, and so that's what he desires. And when he gets it, and he has that power, and he has that wealth, it doesn't make him happy. It might for a short period of time, but it didn't make him happy. He wanted something else. But when he finally got to actually go to Rome, according to the historians, when he actually got to go, what did he do? Preach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Wow. I love that. What a change that Jesus Christ made in this man. There's a lot of different lessons that we can learn from Zacchaeus, and we don't have time this morning to talk about many. But one that kind of stands out is, who in the world can love a man like this? There's a lot of people in this world that are very unlovable. One author said that a mother is the only one that could love a tax collector. And I don't know about that. But it's very obvious here in this text that Jesus Christ loved this tax collector. That Jesus Christ saw something that no one else saw. You know, he could have spoke to anybody. He's there in that crowd and he could say, you know what, I'm going to your house today and we'll talk about this religious matter and that. And he could have done that with anybody and could have gone and dined with anybody. Instead, he chose the reject, the one nobody else wanted. The one everybody else pushed out of the way. And he said, you, I'm going to have dinner with you. I'm going to your house. Jesus loved this man. And because of his great love, because of his acceptance, he changed this man's life. And then church history lets us know that also the church accepted him. And that's a good thing because he was going through Jericho to Jerusalem. And the fact is, Jesus wasn't going to be around much longer. Zacchaeus was not going to be able to be around Zacchaeus for a long time. And after he's gone, who's he going to be with? Well, he's going to be with his family. We, as a church family, are to love. Families love one another. Families do not reject family members. When you have a family member that gets into trouble and is having a hard time, what do? We help them. Do we reject them? No. A healthy, good family does not. They help them. You know what? The same is true with a spiritual family. Brethren, we got a lot of people that are spiritually sick, that are struggling, and they've got real struggles in their life. We don't turn our back on them. We don't reject them. They're our family. And that's very obvious that they did not reject him. They accepted him. You know, I often wonder why in the world is some sin acceptable to us and some sin just makes us sick. You ever wondered that? Every one of us are like that. Every one of us think that way, whether we like it or not. You know, we can look at someone who has a drinking problem, someone who is addicted to drugs, someone who has committed adultery, done this, that, and the other, someone who views child pornography. I mean, you can think of the sickest sin that turns your stomach, and we don't want nothing to do with that person. But, oh, are we comfortable with the sin of materialism, aren't we? We're kind of smug with that one. There's a lot of people in the church that are very materialistic minded. Guess what? That's a sin just like anything else. All sin's the same. There's a lot of people in this world that are hurting. There's a lot of people in this world that are very, very much unlovable. Jesus loved the unlovable. There's a lot of people out there that are kind of like Zacchaeus, and for whatever reason probably built walls around themselves because maybe they've been hurt in the past and they're afraid that if they let somebody in, they're going to be hurt again. A lot of people are going to do you wrong. A lot of people are going to stab you in the back, talk behind your back. There's a lot of people that will do you wrong in a business deal. There's going to be people that you cannot stand the way that they behave and conduct their life. Guess what? They have something in them that you have as well. They have a soul. And they're just as valuable as you are. They're just as valuable as anybody else is. And Jesus saw that in him. The book, Wrap Them Up in Gospel, talks about a story about a man who has committed just what we consider a very, very big sin. And because of that, the church has excommunicated him or disfellowshipped him, whatever you want to call it. And so he's rejected, he's thrown out of the church, and he decides that he won't live that way anymore. He repents of that sin, he turns from that, he quits doing that, and he wants to come back to the church. But the problem is the church won't receive him back. And so he goes to the Lord, here in this story, he goes to the Lord, and he says, Lord, I've committed this terrible sin, and it's an awful sin, but I hate it. And I'm not doing it anymore. And I feel sorry and I feel terrible about it. And I've changed my life and I've tried to go back to the church and they won't receive me. And to that the Lord replied, well, don't worry about it because they won't receive me either. We got to make sure that we're that kind of church. We'll receive anybody because all are in need of forgiveness. You know, when you look at this account of Zacchaeus and of Jesus, you see that Jesus accepted him. Jesus, he had to change, yes, but Jesus loved him. He accepted him. And what a difference he made in this man's life. You know, we see also by tradition that the church accepted this man. They could have rejected him after Jesus' death. The church accepted this man, and because of that, he was able to make a change in other people's lives. One of my favorite passages is at the latter part of this. Verse 10 says, for the Son of Man has come to seek and save those who are lost. You know, that's exactly why Jesus came. He came to make a difference in Zacchaeus' life, in this tax collector, this despised man in his life. And he made a difference in his life. And guess what? Jesus has come to make a difference in that person that you might have in your mind. That person that has stabbed you in the back, that has done you wrong, that person that is living in the filth of sin, in the very worst, he's come to make a difference in their life too. And guess how he chose to do it? Through me and through you to make a difference in their life. He's come to make a difference in my life and your life as well. Thing with Zacchaeus, one thing that we see with him is that he had to get to that point where he was seeking something that he didn't have. He had everything else. It says that he was a rich man. We know that he had power, but yet he wasn't satisfied. He was seeking something else. He knew that the world had all of this to offer, but yet it still wasn't satisfying. So he sought the Lord. I don't know where you are in your life. It might be that there's nobody in here who has gotten to that point. That point to where you're sick of the things of this world, and no matter what this world has to offer, you finally come to the point to where it's not enough. It doesn't satisfy. And if you're not there yet, you will be there. Hopefully sooner than later. It might be that you've gotten to that point in your life. You've tried different things that the world has to offer. You've lived a life maybe for a long time without Jesus. And you realize, you know, there's not much to offer without the Lord. Maybe you're seeking something else. He can make a change in your life. He can make the change in anybody's life. Doesn't matter what you've done. If you want to obey the gospel this morning by responding to the gospel, obeying it believing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, trusting Him before men, turning from sin, and being baptized for the forgiveness of sin, we encourage you to do so while together we stand and sing.